And on today's Windy City Careercast, it's all things political with our political correspondent, Alexandra Billings from L.A. Yes, she has lots of opinions about everything from Blagojevich to the Senate seat in New York City to this ultra-conservative Rick Warren from the Saddleback Church at Obama's inauguration. But it's not what you think. It's not what you think at all. Do we really think we ever know what's going on in Alexandra Billings' head? Today you'll find out. You'll find out the nitty-gritty. And Richard Knight Jr. is doing his review of Frost Nixon. Speaking of politics, and it doesn't get crookeder than that. And news and what's going on in the entertainment scene all this holiday season with Alexandra Billings and me.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Gays and lesbians are all the rage.
We're here and we're queer.
Windy City Queercast.
Windy City Queercast.
Windy City Queercast.
Windy City Queercast.
We are talking mega gay.
Ooh, I like that.
I'm Alexandra Billings.
I'm Amy Matheny. This Queercast is brought to you in part by
Bud Light. Bud Light keeps it coming.
American Airlines. Offering the GLBT community exciting vacation packages online at aa.com/rainbow.
And by Broadway in Chicago. For the hottest tickets in town, visit broadwayinchicago.com.
It's the most wonderful time of the year. With the kids jingle belling and everyone telling you be of good cheer. It's the most wonderful time of the year. It's the happiest season of all. With those holiday greetings and gay happy meetings when friends come to call. It's the happiest season of all. There'll be parties for hosting, marshmallows for toasting, and caroling out in the snow. There'll be scary ghost stories and tales of the glories of Christmases long, long ago.
And you're listening to the Windy City Queercast, show number 272. I'm Amy Matheny.
And I'm Alexandra Billings.
You're Alexandra Billings.
And I'm Alexandra Billings. That's
there
how I'm going to say that from now. I'm Alexandra Billings.
I'm Alexandra Billings.
It's like a run up the scale.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Alex, how did we
go darling.
From the last time we talked? We were so proud to be from Illinois because of politics and change and Barack Obama. And now to be from Illinois is to be aligned with one of the most hated and reviled politicians. We are really the full spectrum here in Illinoisans.
Oh,
it's hilarious. We have the
I don't know why I'm laughing. I just
reviled.
Think the whole it's so stupid. The whole thing is so funny to me. I don't know. You know what's really funny to me? And this kind of has nothing to do with your point, but you know what's really funny to me? His hair. His hair is hilarious.
He's got it.
His hair is – did you hear that – I don't know if this is true or not, but did you hear that every time he goes out to public speak or do anything, he's got to have five separate brushes with him, hair brushes? Did you know that?
I think that's a lie.
I think it's a lie too, but it's funny.
I know it's funny. I've met him, you know, a few times, and he doesn't seem like a fussy man to me. He just has a thick, full head of hair.
He looks like a llama. Doesn't he? He looks like one of the, you know what a llama looks like with the big bushy like monkey's hairdo? Looks like a llama.
Yeah.
He's a lying llama.
Not an alpaca, more like a llama.
More like a llama, really.
Mm-hmm.
That whole situation is just so, oh my God, that guy. Holy criminy. Well, you know, I mean, the thing about it is that, I mean, everybody in politics is corrupt anyway. So, like, my favorite thing is when people are shocked that a politician has done something, you know, that has something to do with some kind of embezzlement or money or, you know, brings moral outrage, the people are shocked. They can't believe it. Why, that's impossible. And I'm like, guys, they're in politics. How do you think they got where they are if they hadn't? I mean, Hillary's a liar and a thief. They're all liars and thieves, all of them.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's really funny because my grandfather used to always say to my nanny, my grandma, you know, he'd always say, well, come on, Alice, let's go vote for the crook. No sense turning a good boy bad. And that was you know, I mean, that was just his thought on politics. I love that phrase so much. You know,
and it's true.
It's so true. It's so true. And I think it's funny that they want to say Illinois is worse than any other state.
Are they saying that?
Well, they are. They're saying, why is Illinois and Chicago politics the most corrupt? And I don't know. I think we're really a political town and we're very Midwestern and we're a more activist town than some. And, you know, I think that we obviously are also the home of the mafia. So there are some people who have kind of legalized the mafia.
Yeah.
And then there are some people who have royalized, deified the mafia, which is like Clintons, Kennedys, Bushes. Those are kind of dynasties, you know. Some people have just legalized them, and I think that's where Blagojevich was hoping he was. But, you know, it's a lot of mafia rule with all this politics and shaking of hands and deals made. And, I mean, it's politicking. Isn't that what we think of politicking is? Otherwise, we just say we're representing. Like, I represent the people.
Well, right. I mean, you know, that's kind of sort of my point in a strange way, is that politics are politics. Chicago, I don't know who's been saying Chicago is the, you know.
Well, they're saying, like, we've had four governors that have been indicted or in jail.
Well, is that any more or less than the senators that come from Washington?
I have no idea.
No, it's not.
And I mean, from Washington come all over, so.
D.C. No, I mean specifically they come from Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
Their track record isn't exactly stellar. It has nothing to do with where you live. It has nothing to do – oh, God, that's ridiculous. It just, you know, I don't know why it happened the way it happened, but it just happened. But it has nothing to do with Illinois, Washington, or, you know, I don't care if you're from Canada. There's, you know, rotten people everywhere.
So it's really interesting. Well, they're power hungry. They're just power hungry people is what I think.
Yes.
You know, it's interesting, though, because we're just with this countdown to the inauguration. There is just so much conversation right now around politics. The open seat in the Senate, that is Hillary's seat now that she is going to be, you know, in the cabinet. You know, you have Caroline Kennedy, who people are saying it's a done deal because she's a Kennedy. And then on the other spectrum, you've got Fran Drescher of The Nanny, who I watched on Larry King Live the other night, who wants to be senator. And I was like, if you could pry your eyes open a little bit so you didn't look like you had just smoked a lot of weed, I would probably think about you. She's really good for the gays. She's really good for women's rights. She's really great for women's health. I'm like, okay, I know a little more about what you've been doing. I had no idea she was doing all this stuff.
Oh, yeah. For years, actually.
Yeah. Yeah. The Nanny. Can you imagine if we had The Nanny as our senator?
She was working out of the Diamond King. It's a great song.
The Nanny. Anne Hampton Calloway.
Hampton Calloway, who's actually a friend of mine, once said to me that song in and of itself bought her house.
I'm sure it did.
Yeah. Literally bought her house, by the way.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it paid every time it, you know, they have to do it, she gets money.
Yeah. Think about those guys with that little jingle for the Friends. And
That's right. Well, that became a hit, though, kind of.
Yeah,
didn't
because
it?
Of
that's
Friends. Not... I'm just saying it's a one-hit wonder.
Yeah. They've never had another one. I think the Fran Drescher thing is kind of fantastic because here's this, you know. I think it's kind of a great idea. I sort of like her. I don't think she's a great actress, but I think what she has to say makes a lot of sense. And I like listening to her views, and I agree with a lot of them. And I don't think it's such a terrible idea. Look, here's the deal. Truly, what kind of experience do you have in order to become a senator? There is no job criteria for that. There is none. It doesn't exist.
Yeah.
And it's not supposed to. That's the way the founding fathers sort of set it up, that it would be great if you're a governor or a mayor or you had political experience. Yes, we want those people. But any United States citizen, as long as you're born in the United States, just like the president, you can become president. As long as you're born, that's the only criteria you have to have.
But governors can be born outside of the U.S. That's right.
A governor can be born outside of the United States. The president of the United States, that's the only criteria. There is no job description. There's a job description, but there is no job criteria.
Right.
In most every other piece of employment, even in the arts, you have to have a list of something that says you can do. You can't go build a set on Broadway without having had apprenticed somewhere else. You can't even do that.
Yeah.
So, and the Senate seats are the same way. You don't have to have done shit. Anybody. You could be a senator. Anybody can.
I haven't done shit, so I could definitely be one.
You would be a great senator, Amy.
You've done some shit. You know, it's funny. Everybody keeps asking me if I'm going to run for office. There have been some people that Kelly has been bumping into, too, who knew me from a long time ago and keeps going, is Amy running for office? She needs to run for office.
That's a good idea.
And I keep telling people, I've wanted to run for office for a decade. But my grandmother said, not as long as I'm still alive. And she just turned 100 on Halloween. And
oh, my God. Did she really?
She did. So,
wow.
You know, here I am, not in politics. Just being political.
Why does your grandmother not want you to be in politics?
Because of the same phrase that my grandfather always said, like good people can't go into politics because it turns them. Turns an honest person bad.
Well, I think that's the big difference is, first of all, you have to have a lot of money. And second of all, that's probably true because you do end up somewhere down the road selling your soul somewhere or at least bargaining for it. That just goes along with the territory. It happened to Obama. You know, I was having this conversation with Sheila O'Malley, who has a wonderful blog, probably the best, one of the best blogs on the net, called The Sheila Variations. And she's a very good friend of mine. And she said, who just had her book published, by the way.
Yay.
She's a very, very good friend. I know. And we were having this conversation about Obama and Bush. And she was saying, and I was agreeing with her, that everyone is in some kind of weird state of waiting for the second coming to happen. As soon as Obama becomes president, we can all be happy again. Mm-hmm. And I keep thinking, you guys, you really need to calm down here because everyone needs to remember, he's a politician.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone needs to be very clear. This guy isn't part of the Mormon Tabernacle Choir. This guy isn't just some guy who's decided to do this because he has nothing better to do.
Right.
So we need to understand that. Politicians are politicians through and through, period.
Well, and that brings us to a recent announcement about who will be heading up his inauguration prayer and service, which is Rick Warren of the Saddleback Church. That Obama passed, and this is a very ultra-conservative Christian minister, which I have no problem with it being a Christian minister, but this man has gone on the record, very pro-choice, very anti-gay, has compared, you know, homosexuality with bestiality and pedophilia. I mean, the oldest kind of anti-gay rhetoric from the pulpit, and gay rights activists and gay leaders are outraged that Obama would ask in such a prestigious appointment on that day of days where we're supposed to be moving toward, you know, government for all people. You know, we're not this America and that America, that he has picked such a divisive religious head to be the spokesperson on that day. What do you think about that?
I think it's the smartest thing he's ever done. Absolutely. No question. Absolutely. Yeah. The smartest move he's ever made. I have absolutely more respect for him now than I did when I voted for him. I think it was the smartest thing he could have done.
And why?
Well, I think that he's doing exactly what he said he was going to do. He turned to all of us and he said, look, Here's the deal. I'm the first African-American guy to sit in this seat. If you think for one second that I'm going to just detour the boat into one direction simply because I'm black, you're nuts. I have to get these other people on board. I have to. Look, he appointed Hillary Secretary of State. What? That makes no sense whatsoever.
Really?
But he knows. Absolutely none. But he knows, in my opinion, he's got to keep that Clinton connection going. And most of the people in his circle are former Clinton aides or Clinton specialists. He knows what he's doing. He knows exactly what he's doing. Now, make no mistake, the guy has said over and over, Obama, I mean, has said over and over again, I believe that marriage is between one man and one woman. He's been very clear about that. He's also added, I believe that history will prove me wrong. We've had this conversation
before.
Yes,
we have.
So we know his stance, much like Hillary Clinton's stance on gay marriage. My personal belief is they both believe that any two people who love each other should marry. Can they say that now in this day and age? Absolutely not. We're in the middle of a civil war over this thing.
Right.
They cannot take sides, folks. The gay people that are angry at this particular position that this guy is holding are flag waving and sign carrying because they don't have anything better to do. They need to relax. They need to chill out. They need to wait until the Supreme Court of California takes Prop 8 and throws it in the toilet, which is what's going to happen.
Right.
Everybody needs to calm down.
Well, you know, it's interesting that you say that because obviously he's going to have to move to the center to lead and he's going to pick and choose, you know, his battles. I just think it's been – I think it was an interesting move to have it be a religious person who is doing that as opposed to – I would have had less problems had he put an ultra-conservative, I don't know, in his cabinet or – I mean, not in his cabinet, because I don't want somebody ultra-conservative in his cabinet because they make decisions and the other guy's just going to pray over everybody.
But exactly.
I don't know. It just seems to set a tone, but I understand what you're saying. It just seems like he could have found a conservative person who hadn't quite compared us with bestiality. They don't have
you
to
also
believe
have,
in it, and they could still have been pro-life and not compare us with pedophiliacs and, you know, and bestiality. That would have made me happy.
And look, I agree with you, Amy. I'm certainly not saying he's devoid of responsibility for this idiot's radical, archaic insanity. I mean, it appeals to a very small, extremist religious sect of America. You know, it's funny because I was listening to James Dobson, who kills me.
Yeah,
and on. He's the funniest man on the planet. And one of his YouTube videos said something like, he was quoting statistics, which is my favorite thing that he does. And he goes, well, you know, the important thing to remember is that only 2% of the United States is gay. And I went, really? 2% of the United States of America is gay. So you have to remember, these people don't deal in reality, and I'm talking about the extremists. I'm not talking about Christians.
Right.
So what Obama is doing – and also remember that this guy doesn't have any power, folks.
Yeah.
He can't pass any laws. He's not going to – Obama knows that. And Obama and his whole family are religious people. So it makes sense. And he's trying to get back those extremist people that he annihilated during his campaign because he alienated those people and threw a bomb on them.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because he said today in response to it that, you know, he felt like he wanted to invite him because Warren had invited Obama into his church. And he knew that they did not share similar views at all. And that was the kind of dialogue that he hoped we would have as a country. And I get that. And I do get that. But I think that the gay activists are, you know, of course on, you're hearing Hardball and Rachel Maddow and everybody saying, you know, okay, progressives, the honeymoon is already over. You know, that for the liberals, the honeymoon's already over. It now gets to not look like what you want it to look like. You know, because the guy's in the chair now and has to do what he has to do to get business done. So, I mean, I don't know. We have bigger fish to fry, honestly, than who is praying at the inauguration. Just an interesting choice, and it's going to be, you know, a buzz for a little while, as long as gay leaders keep it a buzz.
Yeah.
But it does seem like we always get to be the pot shot, don't we? We just always get to be, the scapegoat. We always get to be the amendment ballot on the ballot initiative. We always get to be everybody's equal but us, you know, kind of group. And when will that day end? You know, to have the Obama, it is continually fitting that it was the day Obama was elected that Prop 8 was voted in, you know, and it's just fitting, I think, for this theme that gay activists are going to try to ride as long as they can, because it's another battle to be won in this war of visibility and, I think, of frustration of being put in this position.
Well, here, you know, it's funny you should say that, because here's the really interesting thing that happened to me literally this afternoon. Chris Ann and I went to the mailbox and we were going to go, you know, run some errands and stuff. So we picked up the mail, and in the mail was our marriage certificate, our legalized document from the state of California that legally marries. Yeah. Chris Ann and I. And we had just left the house talking about this whole Obama thing and you know, this praying stuff that's going to go on at his inauguration.
Well, there's always prayer at an inauguration.
right. Well, you know what I mean. I don't want to get into that. But anyway, if you want to pray, that's great. Pray your ass off. Pray your tits away.
I always do.
I don't. But we were sitting in the car, and we both started to sort of tear up. We're, you know, looking at this historic document. And we're sort of tearing up and we're like, oh my God, this is amazing. And then after we sort of got over the sentimentality, as we're driving, I turned to Chris and I said, now, you realize that this is only good in three states of the United States of America.
Yep.
In every other state, we're breaking the law. So when you talk about homosexuals being, and the transgender community is a whole other discussion. Luckily, I have cards in both communities. I'm a card lady.
You're a platinum trans person.
That's right. I'm the American Express card holder for both groups. But when you talk about sort of the homosexual community being on sort of bottom rung, it really is true. And it really doesn't hit you until something like this is presented to you. It's like, here you go. Oh, but by the way, don't go to New York because this doesn't matter.
Right.
Don't go to Florida because this doesn't matter. Yeah. Don't go to Texas because this doesn't matter. It means nothing.
Yeah.
So it's interesting that we received this beautiful confirmation of our 37 years together. And at the same time, it could be, you know, caught in a trash fire and it really wouldn't matter. So yeah, we're at the bottom rung, but what we have to remember is, in order to climb up the ladder, you have to go rung by rung. You can't skip any. Yeah. And a lot of times I feel that that's what the gay movement wants to do. They want to skip a couple of rungs. Yeah. And we can't do it. Yeah. We can't.
No, that's a really, really, really good way of looking at it, because, you know, all of these movements have taken time and we are an infantile movement. You know, even though we have been around forever as a movement, as a mobilized activist movement, a civil movement, we are a young movement still, you know. Well, it is interesting. We're talking about politics, and on today's show, Richard Knight Jr. taking us to a film that has already been nominated for a Golden Globe. Who knows, will it be nominated for an Oscar? Already had SAG nominations. I'm talking about Frost Nixon. And Richard Knight Jr. telling us his thoughts on that coming out this holiday season. And also, we are going to tell you what's going on in the news and also what's going on in the theater world. And then we're going to be back with Alexander Billings to talk about the funny, the political, and the funny.
Oh.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men
Today we salute you, Mr. Male Fur Coat Wearer.
Mr. Male Fur Coat Wearer.
Perhaps fashion's greatest mystery. What makes a big, strong man say, I think I need a new fur coat?
I don't know.
The very height of political incorrectness. Nothing says, I could give a rat's rear end like a man in a floor-length chinchilla.
I'm taking no prisoners.
A look that's half street pimp, half Aunt Esther, and full-on fur-tastic. Sure, it's gauche, but you don't spend more on your coat than your car, not to be noticed.
But look at me.
So crack open a nice cold Bud Light, Mr. Male Fur Coat Wearer, because it takes a real man to wear a lady's coat.
Mr. Male Fur Coat Wearer.
Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
I'm Kirk Williamson.
I'm Amy Matheny.
And this is the Week in News.
Gay rights organizations criticize President-elect Barack Obama for selecting evangelical minister Rick Warren to deliver the invocation at his inauguration ceremony. Warren, the pastor of Saddleback Church in California and author of the hugely successful book The Purpose-Driven Life, is against same-sex marriage and abortion rights. Obama defended his choice, saying people should come together even if they disagree about social topics.
The Sexuality and Gender Law Clinic at New York's Columbia Law School has secured asylum for a gay HIV-positive man from the Ivory Coast who feared persecution if he was forced to return to his homeland. The African man, who arrived in the United States in January 2004, said that he was constantly subjected to verbal, physical, and sexual abuse in the Ivory Coast.
In Columbia, Missouri, former police officer Steven Rios, age 31, has been found guilty of murdering Jesse Valencia, age 23, with whom he had an affair. Rios had been convicted of the 2004 murder back in 2007. However, the Missouri Court of Appeals Western District overturned the ruling because of problems connected with hearsay statements. The jury recommended that Rios serve a life sentence plus 23 years.
In an effort to reach out to the gay community, healthcare benefit company Aetna has formed an LGBT advisory council. Among the members are the National Coalition for LGBT Health Executive Director Rebecca Fox and Gay and Lesbian Medical Association Executive Director Joel Ginsberg.
In Iowa, Sioux City, council members are delaying taking action on an anti-same-sex marriage resolution. Before proceeding, the city's mayor, Mike Hobart, said that he wanted to consult the state's attorney general on whether we have the jurisdiction and authority to pass the resolution.
In England, a court has issued an international police alert for Joanne Skinner, a lesbian who may have left the United Kingdom with the child she had with a gay friend. 3 years after having her son, Ashley, with gay friend Michael Turberville in 2001, Skinner stopped allowing him to visit the child. Then, last year, Skinner and the boy disappeared.
A new study in Toronto, Ontario, says that lesbian, gay, and bisexual teenagers stand a better chance of becoming pregnant or causing a pregnancy than their heterosexual counterparts. The authors speculate that harassment, discrimination, and sexual abuse may force LGB teens to engage in riskier behavior.
The Rainbow Vision Project, a planned LGBT retirement community promoted by lesbian tennis icon Billie Jean King, is yet another victim of the country's mortgage crisis. The lender reclaimed the project's land in a foreclosure auction. Rainbow Vision, which was to go up in Palm Springs, California, was going to have 184 condos, tennis courts, and a clubhouse with a nightclub, cafe, and spa.
International pop star Kylie Minogue will release a new collection of remixes of her classic songs entitled Boombox, the remix album 2000 to 2008, on January 27th. There will be remixes of Slow, Come Into My World, and Can't Get You Out of My Head.
Hunky Twilight actor Taylor Lautner is working out in an attempt to convince the movie's producers he should reprise his role in the forthcoming sequel, New Moon. Reportedly, the franchise's bosses felt that Lautner does not physically measure up to the character as described in the books. And that's the Week in News, brought to you by Windy City Times.
Hi, this is Christopher Lee Nutter, the author of The Way Out, and you are listening to the Windy City Queercast, which does not suck.
Let's go to the movies anyway and see.
I'm Richard Knight Jr. with another Night at the Movies Minute. Two competing prestige films opening this week, Doubt and Frost Nixon, are big screen adaptations of award-winning Broadway plays and will most likely compete when awards time comes around. Frost Nixon comes to the screen with its stage leads, Michael Sheen and Frank Langella, intact. Director Ron Howard has opened up the play, giving us a transatlantic look at the backstage machinations, I can never say that word, but you know, behind the scenes, goings on. That went on as the London-based talk show host negotiated with ex-President Richard Nixon, who had resigned and gone into exile in his California coast home, and the back-and-forth jet-set feel helps at the outset, but doesn't sustain the film for long. Howard's movie is entertaining enough, though, thanks to this opening up of the material, and thanks to the intricately worked-out performance of Langella as Nixon, obviously scaling it back for the camera. And there is welcome supporting work from a prickly Sam Rockwell and Oliver Platt as Frost's antsy research team. But I guess I've just seen one too many movies about the disgraced president to find the material compelling. And Sheen's characterization of Frost, with his alternate gigantic ego one minute and slices of insecurity the next, isn't all that far from his performance as Tony Blair in The Queen, or nearly as fun. In fact, seen on the screen, Frost, Nixon, and The Queen, both written by Peter Morgan, aren't all that different, considering that both focus on the delicate personal negotiations between two highly powerful individuals. But the glacial, imperious Queen Elizabeth in the personage of Helen Mirren was much more enthralling than Nixon, good as Langella is, and the material, with its backstage view of power and action, was much more insightful and lyrical than The Queen. And given my choice, I'll take Mirren as Lizzie over Langella as Tricky Dicky any day of the week. I'm Richard Knight Jr., and that's your Night at the Movies Minute.
More bling than the Gold Coast. More satisfying than a Chicago-style pizza. Monty Python's Spamalot has it all. And now, the funniest show in the world has one more bright side. Richard Chamberlain. There will be just 2 weeks of silliness, only 13 days of bliss, a mere 16 chances to join Richard Chamberlain as King Arthur, as this laugh-out-loud, sensational symposium of silliness comes to the Auditorium Theater. So don't miss it, or we may never come back. We're very sensitive. Spamalot at the Auditorium Theater of Roosevelt University, January 20th to February 1st. Tickets are on sale now. Visit BroadwayInChicago.com today to see Richard Chamberlain and Monty Python's Spamalot.
Culture Club. Culture Club. Culture Club. Theater.
Music.
Dance.
Art.
Performance.
Provocative.
Hilarious.
Exciting.
Weird.
Innovative.
Campy.
Edgy.
Original.
Get some culture in your life.
Join the club.
For the week of December 22nd, 2008, you are in Chicago's Culture Club. The Chicago holiday tradition is back. American Theater Company's celebrated ensemble lovingly presents It's a Wonderful Life, the radio play, adapted from the film by Frank Capra. It's the classic story as a period radio play complete with commercial breaks and live Foley sound effects. Playing now through December 28th. For tickets, visit atcweb.org.
Don't miss the hilarious comedy Don't Dress for Dinner, starring Burn Notice star Jeffrey Donovan and Patricia Callenber, formerly of TV Sisters. Playing now at the Royal George Theater. For tickets to Don't Dress for Dinner, go online at don'tdressfordinner.com.
Remy Bumbo Theater Company presents The Marriage of Figaro, now playing through January 4th at the Greenhouse Theater Center. 5 stars, says Time Out Chicago. A top-to-bottom delight whose message is nestled in an abundance of screwball craft. Don't miss The Marriage of Figaro in a new adaptation. For more information, visit remybumbo.org. And for more Culture Club, visit windycitytimes.com.
Hello, Deb Pierce here, letting you know that we'd love to hear back from you. So go ahead. You know you want to. Post a comment.
And you better watch out. You better not cry. You better not pout. I'm telling you why. Santa Claus is coming to town. Santa Claus is coming to town. Santa Claus is coming to town. He's making a list. He's checking it. Santa Claus is coming to town. Santa Claus.
Okay, Alex, is there anything funnier than seeing George Bush duck from a shoe?
Well, let's be clear. He ducked twice. So let's be clear about how many times he ducked.
He ducked really well. I was really impressed with that old man.
Well, he's used to it. I mean, how many things have been thrown at the guy?
I sat there and thought? I bet. I wonder how many times Laura Bush threw shit at him when he was fucked up out of his head. And it was glasses and he come in all coked up or drunk. And
that's
she
right.
was probably throwing shit at him. Because you know they had Armageddon before that night when she said, you do it one more time and I am out of here. And I am your ticket to the White House because I am the most civil thing in your life. That's all I thought about was like highball glasses smashing against the back. And I'm sure that's what that little smirk was. He was like, dude, I've had glass thrown at his head. Throw a fucking piece of rubber leather shoe at me.
That's right.
Didn't you just think
oh
that?
My God.
And you know he was had to have been the brother that got beat up on. I don't know why. He just seems like he was a cheerleader for God's sakes. He couldn't. He never really served in the military. I just bet he was a kid who learned real quickly how to run fast and duck fast on baseball fields and football fields and playgrounds and.
Run, Forrest, run!
Or buy people shit, which is probably what he did once he started getting into college, and he was probably buying people beer and cocaine, and then they loved him, you know? He, bought his friends and his fraternity group, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Hilarious.
Well, you know, the thing about absolutely. I mean, there's no question. Here's what happened to me is I sort of watched it, and then I laughed for, I don't know, a good day. And then I went, I started to read about all the hoopla surrounding the shoe thrower journalist guy, mm-hmm. and how they were sort of hailing him as this hero and mm-hmm. holding him up and, you know, all this esteem and stuff. And then I started to get a little pissed off because I was like, you know what? Here's the deal. He's an idiot, Bush. Absolutely. I don't like the guy.
Right.
I don't like what he's done. I can't wait for him to leave. I can't wait for the guy to leave. I couldn't wait for Richard Nixon to leave. I mean, I couldn't wait for Reagan to leave. There's been a lot of presidents that I couldn't wait to leave. But don't throw your goddamn shoes at our president.
Right.
Who the hell do you think you are? And let me tell you something else. If you think for one second you can throw your shoes at our president and then be called a hero and think that the United States is going to come together and mock him, you're fucking out of your mind. That's what pissed me off.
Yeah.
It wasn't that it was Bush. It was that it was the president of the United States. You do not treat – but see, this is how low – speaking of the ladder, this is how low the United States has fallen down the ladder of respect in the
right.
world.
Right.
There would be no way in hell a journalist would have done that to Kennedy or to Reagan.
Or to Clinton.
Or to John Adams, or to, you know, you just didn't, you do not treat the president of the United States like that. You want to make a statement? You're a journalist. Sit down, go to your typewriter or your computer and write something and then be hailed a hero. You don't have to make a spectacle of yourself and act like some kind of ape in a zoo.
Right.
What the hell is wrong with you? So then I got infuriated. So at first I laughed and I thought it was really funny. And I have to admit, I still watch it and I still giggle. But
hey, I'm impressed. I'm entirely impressed with his agility. I have to tell you. I mean, it is, and I'm impressed with it was economical too.
God.
You know, it's like watching a pro. Uh-oh. It's like watching Bob Dylan play guitar. It's like he only expelled as much energy as he needed to absolutely,
that's right.
you know, block or, you know, get out of the way of it. It was great. It was really
well,
graceful.
And here's
it was one of the most graceful
things
I've ever seen him do in his 8 years of administration, honestly.
Yeah, that's right. I got to say something else. I mean, as long as we're talking about that, you know, the guy who threw the shoes, he's not a very good thrower because Bush is really, he's not that hard to hit, quite frankly. So,
right.
you know. That guy needs a couple of more lessons. I don't see that he's such a hero. He missed the guy.
Yeah. It's true.
Come on.
It's true.
You're going to be a hero. At least hit him in the head or something. He missed.
Yep. No, I'm with you, too. I think that I think you and I were talking or you emailed me that morning and I hadn't even seen it yet. So and you were like, can't wait to talk about shoes with you or talk about the shoe with you or something. And I had no clue what you're talking about. I was like, yeah, yeah, Alex, she's insane. What the hell is she talking about? And then you like watch it. And I was like, oh, my God, you kind of laugh. And then you realize, because I think, you know, from the onset, there's no imminent danger. I mean, I think that's the thing.
That's right.
But it is still hard for me to even see people like flag burn and things like that. I don't know why, but I can't imagine burning somebody else's flag. I don't know. I can't even think. I mean, would I want to burn a Nazi flag? Maybe, you know, or a flag of a symbol of hate. And maybe that's what they equate us with. But I can't even imagine that. I mean,
well, I think they do. But, you know, again, you're talking, you know, the Nazi flag was a sect. You know, it wasn't.
Right. Not
it wasn't
a nation.
That's right.
Well, they thought it was a nation, though. They thought they were the Aryan nation. They claimed
nation. Right. Well, what they thought and what was true are two different things.
Correct.
I mean, you know, any kind of radical group is, you know, radical for a reason. They're crazy and stupid and wrong. So, I mean, you know, I agree with you. I certainly, you know, I think it's true. I think there's a lot of the Arab nation that considers us hateful, hate mongers, and, you know, they burn our flag in effigy. And I, yeah. So, I mean, you know, yes, I think that's true. And I would agree with you. There has to be a code. I mean, it's weird. You know, you talk about the Geneva Convention, and, you know, when you go into war, you say, I'm going to kill you. And the other side goes, well, I'm going to kill you too. And then they have to sit down and go, all right, how exactly are we going to kill each other? Well, we can't drop the bomb. No, we can't do that. Well, I'll say, you know, and they have a conversation. It's the strangest freaking thing on the planet.
Right.
And yet it's as old as time.
It's like, I challenge you to a duel. Yeah. Okay, what are we fighting with? Are we fighting with swords or rapiers? Are we fighting with pistols? Or, you know, I mean, that was the old way to settle a, you know, they, both sides had the same, you know, they'd show up. It was very civilized. It's not much different. It's as old as time, the rules of war, so to speak,
right,
quote unquote.
Right.
That's
right.
That,
and I
think
rules within that, when, you know, when the big men are fighting each other, then, because, you know, the wars were started by, let's be honest,
men.
The men. That's right. Either over land or religion. It's one of the two. And what filters down to us little people, all the women and children and other men in society, is, okay, now how do we fight? Because we've sent off our men and women to go do this civilized, quote unquote, war. So what do we do in our own country, in our own state, in our own county? Well, the only thing we have is our hands. So we're going to take your flag and we're going to set it on fire.
Right.
Because it's the only choice we've got to do. But in the United States, this is why we've got to get back. The United States is a country founded on grace and equality. And that's what we need to remember, God damn it. So we have to come to fucking together. We've got to stop all this segregation. Gay, straight, black, white, Christian, Jew, atheist, we've got to knock it off. We have got to come together. And everybody's got to calm down and stop. And we've got, when our president gets hit by a shoe, or almost hit by a shoe from a nation that we're at war with, then we've got, no matter how you feel about this guy, you've got to stand up and say, oh, no, 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 no. You don't get to treat the United States like that. When he's done being president, hit the guy with a wrench. I don't care. But he's our president. You don't treat us like that. You don't treat my family like that or my friends like that.
Well, you know what I think could bring us all together?
What?
And I think that these two people are really just showing truly togetherness. And that is Britney Spears doing Christmas carols with Ellen DeGeneres on The Ellen Show. Is about the funniest thing I've ever seen in my entire life.
I haven't seen it.
Because it highlights not only that Britney Spears has no voice, it also highlights that she does have a sense of humor, and it's quite funny. And Ellen was peppering all this past week, you know, little snippets of Britney and her going out and Christmas caroling around L.A. to people's houses, and it was truly some funny, silly, good stuff. So maybe Britney and the Circus CD will bring us all together and will heal not only Britney,
listen,
but the world.
Tell you something. That CD is fantastic.
Yeah?
It's fantastic. fantastic. It has great, great music on it. I love it. I play it all the time. I love that little messed up little girl. I love her. I think she's great. I love her. I am at Britney's defense, I must tell you.
I know you are. I think that they pulled a Frances Farmer. I think she's been a bit lobotomized, but that's okay.
I don't care. I'm fine with that. I like my stars lobotomized.
Yeah, I think she's had a stick through her eye. It's very suddenly last summer or whatever that, what was it, Summer and Smoke, which is the one? Which is the
suddenly
Tennessee
last summer. Suddenly the last turtles summer. Turtles were undersides.
There you go.
Sebastian and Violet. Violet and Sebastian.
There you go. Oh, so Katharine Hepburn hopefully will make an appearance in our next show. It will be our Christmas show. And Alexander Billings is going to share with us some of her Christmas memories. One Christmas in particular.
Actually, I'm going to share my Christmas memories. But go ahead.
Your Christmas memories? Okay.
Yeah, you know.
So you're not going to want to miss that. We are still producing a Queercast on Christmas. So you will have a show with your eggnog and your Yuletide. And hanging those boughs of holly.
Don't forget to hang your balls on the tree.
And hang your balls on the tree. So we'll be back with a new Queercast in just days. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now.
Thanks for listening to another Windy City Queercast. This program is brought to you in part by Bud Light. Bud Light keeps it coming. Broadway in Chicago. For the hottest tickets in town, visit BroadwayInChicago.com. And American Airlines, offering exciting GLBT vacations online at aa.com/rainbow. Special thanks to our Queercast family, Kirk Williamson, newscaster, and Di Sturkey, production editor. I'm Amy Matheny, your host. Please comment on our shows at WindyCityQueercast.com and iTunes. The next Queercast is only days away, so don't miss it. Subscribe today. Windy City Queercast, queer and now.